Chapter 10 Calico Archives. The little privacy room where John stood staring at Sarah's solemn face was little bigger than a closet. The room provided the occupants escape from the constant monitoring that took place on the ship. It contained some large post-it notes stuck to the wall, a felt-tip pen, and a handset, which allowed the user to communicate through the relay system. Residing off the ring, there was no need to sit, so no chairs. There would not have been room for them anyway. Capable of barely holding three people under normal conditions, John's stance with his hands firmly planted on his hips made it difficult for just the two of them to fit comfortably. No, 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 absolutely not. Dad, there's no other way for them to move the necessary ships into position. Besides, Shannon says that the backup fuel cell power plant will supply enough power to hold Step 3. You want to completely strip this ship and give the components to an alien species we've only just met, so they can rescue some of their own. Why? Dad, they need our help, and we have the means to do just that. I don't see the issue here, Sarah stated firmly. The issue is, what if something goes wrong and both drives are damaged? We will not be able to get back. See where I'm coming from? This is a whole lot bigger than you'd think. Shannon says she could build another drive here if she had to. We've talked about just such a thing happening. And if the Talons end up with the drive, then what? We live on a planet that's over 8 light years away, Dad. I don't think they're going to find Earth and attack it. In fact, I think we should deploy the rest of the step relays going back to Regem so there can be a real-time record of what happens. John stood there staring. He could not believe what he was hearing. I can't believe what I'm hearing. Who all of you approached about doing this? He challenged. You are the last person, Dad. Everyone else is good to go. John let out a single spasmodic laugh as he looked at his daughter. There were so many things that could go wrong. Morally, it was the right thing to do, but they knew nothing about this species. For all he knew, they were doing the very same thing to a completely different race. We can't even communicate properly. John's face winced at the thought. Just hear us out, Sarah pushed. James and Shannon have worked up a doable plan, and it's a lot less risky than you might think. Fine, I'll hear you out. But I'm still saying no, he convinced himself. They walked out of the privacy room near storage to see the entire crew gathered, waiting. As Sarah exited, she gave a thumbs up that was accompanied by a sudden cheer from the collective group. Damn it, Sarah! John mentally shouted at his daughter. So the design began on the compression coils that were going to be needed, seeing as it was going to be the hardest things to make. The special Lisa-Jew was the shape that the Step 4 drive required at the 1-to-2 ratio. It was extremely specific, and because of the way that Shannon had designed the drive, you could not just build a set of Step 3 coils and limit the pulse. No, of course not. John's attitude had not improved much since the ambush and supply, and this design complicated things even more. They are going to want at least one of their warships over there, you know. The spare generator is not going to supply the power to run the coils of that size, Shannon. You know that. John, you need to lighten up. The plan is to simply move men and equipment in the space we have allotted. They already know how much room we are guessing will be available, and they can make allowances on their end. You know, there will likely be a battle of some sort. People are going to die. Probably on both sides. Maybe on all three. I seem to remember you sitting in the conference room asking the Talons if they wanted to do something about their missing people. Well, this is us doing something, Shannon countered. So, stop worrying and help me get this coil design right. Sure, bring that up, his mind cried out in anger. But as the intense work progressed, his mood began to mellow. Sarah had told Shannon about her father's misgivings, so they knew that a little finesse was going to have to be applied. He would come around. The spare step drive, fuel cell generator, and thrust units were repositioned inside a big tube of aluminum, and the drive would be controlled using the skiff as the main instrument package. The tricky part was the coil configuration for the tube, and the covering to protect the plasmoid field alignment. "They say the stuff will work," James observed. "Who are they?" Jaunt's question lingered. "Marty says they use a similar magnetic confinement engine. It's just that they seem to have missed the part about holding step, so they bounce all the time. They still need to shield their drive, though." "And they say it can be sprayed on today?" "A couple of hours, it sounds like," James stated. "Huh. Well, this is coming together pretty quick. Now remember, they've been doing this for a long time, and they seem to know what they're doing." "Sure, but 2 days?" "Most of the stuff was already here. They just grabbed a big tube, cut some holes in it, and made some mounting brackets and floors." "What's left to mount?" John asked. "The skiff's fuel tank is big enough for the trip, so other than the coils, it's about done. Minus the coating they're spraying on now. And the coils should be ready to mount by early tomorrow." The final product looked more like a kitchen utensil designed to blend ingredients. And with the addition of some thruster components from the Talon inventory, the ship could steer and maneuver. James moved it away from the floating dock and tried the drive. It went on step and held. He then cycled through the third step and announced it to be working. A small cheer broke out from the humans, which got the Talons excited as well. The story from the burn victim suggested that the best time to make the rescue attempt was at night. Turns out the guy has a sense of humor, as there is no night when you live inside a glowing plasma discharge. What they had to do was wait for the right time. That was when the humidity of the planet became so high that the work was impossible. The charge of the planet would get siphoned off and the power level would drop below a working threshold. This is when the workers were given the opportunity to rest. This would be the time to strike. The hydrogen ions that were streaming off of Regem all the time would flow away from the anode of the gas giant. These ions would then have a chance to combine with the oxygen molecules in the atmosphere of the little Regems, and over time, the humidity level would get to the point where it would rain. During the rains, the sentries would power down under cover without concern that the workers would run. Run where? The humidity cycle was well understood, as it corresponded to a certain number of the planet's rotations. From the day he left, the Talon estimated 40 more rotations until the rain. If he was right, they had about 5 more Earth days to finish prep work and instigate the plan. "How much more junk have they got to load?" John asked impatiently. The small fighters, like the ones James had gotten pics of while on the Talon ship, were being secured. They had already moved 10 of them to the staging area along with a habitat which currently housed 37 soldiers. This staging area was a significant distance from Rajem, but the planet's course would intersect staging in a few days. "Supplies are loaded, just waiting on the air," Sarah shot back. This was to be the final shipment. If everything went according to plan, the unwilling participants would begin getting shuttled off the surface in 1 or 2 more days. Each supply run was followed by a stopover at Planet 4, and each had verified that the humidity levels were swiftly increasing. The rains were coming. Rumorion Transcripts. The Talon emergency beacon was heard by all 4 ships at the same time. A quick communique between the commanders of the Rumorion ships formulated a plan to investigate. "If it is Talon, then they have new technology, and we need to find where they got it from. It also means that they are looking for the prisoners that are currently working the mines on the planet below," the fleet commander told himself. A ship was dispatched to find the beacon and, with luck, capture the crew. This bit of news needed to be delivered to the local council, for they will want to be made aware of the development, even though the evidence was incomplete. The raider vessel was informed that a recording was to be made along with the signal amplitude and direction of origin. It was then told to return to their system and await instructions from the Council for the fleet. The beacon did not take long to find. It laid on an asteroid, along with what appeared to be a form of experimental craft. The Rumorian commander was contemplating his options. Very poorly made and without any armor. An experimental ship, no doubt. They must be testing out a new long-range drive system, and unfortunately for them, they either ran out of fuel or did not know the asteroid field was here. Either way, we will wait for the body to rotate the ship and Talons back into visual reference. Then we will utilize the recovery vessel. Calico Archives. Nina Tam, Miesha, and the rest of the Talons, who were sitting in the conference room on the ring, all had the look of astonishment as they watched the real-time video that was being presented. The images included not only the asteroid field, but the renderings of the fourth planet of the Regim system. Their astonishment was reinforced by the fact that the Calico was nowhere near either of these targets, as it rested with the habitat, used as a staging area for the Talon troops. The encounter that was to take place between the Regem system and the staging area was still over a day away, and when the last of the Talon force was moved into position, they would still be separated by several million miles, a journey well within the range of all the vessels that had been assembled for the operation to come. "Doc, the feed all looks really good. I think the guests are suitably impressed." John's compliment was shared by all. Nina Tam was in the process of adjusting the view to zoom in on a section of the Rumorian ship. The image was good enough to see tiny faces through the window. He then pressed a button on the glass display and the screen transformed into a 360-degree view of the camera's surroundings. Each of the Talon's attack crafts were automatically pinpointed with distance and vector data. The numerical symbols between the two species had already been worked out, so the display showed both sets of information in both languages with the correct conversion values applied. "Thank you. But if it weren't for James and Shannon's help, I'm afraid we would not be having this view," Dr. Schubert acknowledged. "Fair enough," John had to agree. The remaining step relays had been modified to work in conjunction with the doctor's scopes. With the units removed from their locations on the compression coils and reconfigured, the doctor went about modifying the software, allowing each to seamlessly integrate with the relay's interface to which they were attached. The cadets had all gathered in the galley and were watching the scene play out on a separate display. The Rumorian ship had taken the bait and was on station. The supposed crash ship was in view long enough for the Rumorians to get a good look at the crash site before it disappeared. The scene would reappear in about 20 minutes, and that is when they hoped the rescue and capture of the equipment would take place. "See there? Looks like they're readying a small ship to make the grab," Connor Murphy said excitedly. The display suddenly split and showed the vessel and the fighters in two distinct frames. "How about those disguises? When you look straight at them, they look like they're just another rock. But from above..." Amy Grant left it at that. There was no explanation needed. The nose of each of the fighters had a cover that could blow apart when needed. Viewed from the side, the small vessels looked like an umbrella that was open, but the outer surface of the nose cap was meant to look just like another rock floating in an ocean of small rocks. That is what made the caper possible. They were selecting this area for the debris that already existed. The fighters were well hidden and at the same time slowly advancing on their quarry. But everyone knew that the attack craft were not there to confront the Rumorian ship. The real work would be carried out by the 20 armed troops that were hidden, waiting to advance on the target. The Talons planned on taking this ship intact.
"Zaludic called that one right," Sarah said to no one in particular.
Though Nina Tam was constantly playing around with his display, others were dedicated to certain views, and one was the planet.
The lightning was becoming more intense across the display as the rains began to fall. The energy stored in the atmosphere was being discharged rapidly and with blinding regularity. The camp showed that the workers were already under cover. The sentries, located deep within hollowed-out areas, high up in the rock face, and likely powered down to prevent any kind of electrical damage during the storm. A violent storm that would last for days. Zalutik was the prisoner who had been rescued from that godforsaken world. His injuries prevented him from participating in the coming adventure. However, he was able to provide them with some valuable information. A physical item consisting of a series of symbols arranged on placards that each of the Talons carried with. These placards would be shown to the Rumorion crew members in the hopes of gaining their cooperation. As it turned out, the captors insisted that the Talons were expected to learn as much of their language as possible, and at times, spurred on at the point of an energy lance. As the crew of the Calico watched, the ruse began to play out. The beacon was rotating into view, along with the two auto drills and the bits of metal that composed the disguise. It was the Rumorion commander who realized that the objects thought to be Talon test pilots were a pair of sampling units, just like the ones they had seen working the asteroid near the damaged freighter. "So, this is Talon technology, not equipment from the second ship that we had chased and lost track of. The ship was probably destroyed on a rock, but something we never confirmed. And what of this damaged craft? The drive components may not be as powerful as the fleet commander suspected. Automated data gathering devices could spend lifetimes in space, traveling between the systems instead of the days that it would take their ships." But it was a report that the fleet commander submitted to the council that intrigued him the most. "The official report states that the data gathering devices were definitely from this new species. Now the report will need to be changed. Not only that report, but the backups as well." This last thought caused him to smile with satisfaction. "Three different backups on two types of medium. One of them is off-site, and each extremely difficult to alter. The council was not going to be pleased with this bit of information. The fleet commander might very well lose his position for such a mistake. Since I am the next in line as fleet commander, and I make the discovery of the error, I might be given the position." His smile grew wider. "It is time." The support craft disengaged from the host ship and began to make its way to the surface of the asteroid. At around the same time, 20 Talon troopers began the trip to the outer hull of their quarry. It did not take but a quarter of an hour, and then the display showed how well the active camouflage on the Talon suits worked. For a moment, the suited figures were visible as black dots against the hull, but then they disappeared completely. The Rumorion sensors had not registered the debris impact, nor how the debris was making its way to the open bay door and to the front of the ship. Once in position, the troops would wait for the signal to advance, but it would be the forward unit that would start the process. Arriving at the bridge area, the windows were examined using a scanning device to get the composition and thickness, at which point the charges were set accordingly. Then came the wait. The plan was for the support craft to be back inside before initiating the attack. There was no way of knowing if this craft could mount some sort of defense, and the moment the bay doors closed was likely the moment their guards would be the most relaxed. Mission accomplished. The crew working to collect the equipment from the rock reported that the data gathering unit and all important parts of the failed craft fit in the rear cage, and they were heading back to the ship. The commander, busy calculating the pay and status increase he anticipated receiving from the council, acknowledged the communication with a wave of his hand. "I might even be entitled to the fleet commander's mate. That would be a coup." Silently contemplating the future, his pleasure grew as the different scenarios played out in his mind. "The ship is back in its bay and the doors are closed," What are your orders, Commander? The response was not heard over the noise of the explosion and the rush of atmosphere leaving the room. It stopped just as suddenly as it started when the emergency panel slid into place. The ship's operators all looked at the overhead window that had just blown out, and they all felt a sudden urge to use the facilities. It was not until they looked back towards the window at the front of the ship that the urge became overwhelming. Calico Archives. The suited individuals were just outside the ship, and it was obvious that the strips that had been attached to all the windows could empty the room of its atmosphere in an instant. The closest of the figurines held a square object up against the window, and the writing was recognized. Do you want to live? The injured Zalutik had impressed upon his rescuers how this was the most common phrase used by their Rumorian captors. There had been times when the tribulations got to be too much and the answer returned was no. The life-ending response was always acted on swiftly, but not efficiently. They did not want the prisoners to give up, so the death was painfully drawn out and in full view of the rest of the camp. Of course, when the answer was yes, they want to live, the pain inflicted was still severe, but not too. Regardless, if the question was asked, there was going to be pain, no matter what. That is how he came to acquire his near electrocution. The sentry asked, then applied the appropriate punishment for the response, but Zulotic had been using a defective lance, and the energy imparted from the sentry caused the lance to discharge through his hand, across his chest, and back to the sentry's finger. It was a bad day for both. So, what do you guys think of those suits? James asked the cadets as he was refilling his water bottle and grabbing a cookie. Yeah, we were just talking about that, Jerry said. So, how about if you do something like that to our suits? She asked with a hopeful voice. That's beyond me, he stated. Besides, the government's been developing that kind of tech for years. You just have to convince the higher-ups that you need it. No point trying to reinvent the wheel. About this time, John stepped into the galley with his coffee cup in hand. Have you ever thought about getting that thing physically attached so you never lose it? James asked, nodding towards the cup. Are they cooperating? Asked Amy. Looks like, John nodded. The ship is powering up and will be heading back to Talon along with their escorts. Two of Nina Tam's senior staff and a couple of fighters will announce the arrival. They don't want to get blown out of the sky once they get there, he said, looking at the cadets for a long moment. I have to admit, John acknowledged, those guys would give you a run for your money. Amy first looked at John, then over to James, and complained, Well, if we had that kind of reactive tech, I'd say no contest. The group broke into laughter. It took several hours, but the fighters were moved back into position for the impending rendezvous with the Regem system. There was time. The encounter was still over 15 hours away, and the entire assembled group was in position with the correct velocity vectors to minimize fuel consumption. The nice thing was that the hardest part was already done. Time for rest, thought Need and Tam as he reviewed his remaining troops, stationed on the Calico with their lodgings consisting of the spinning IP. The attack craft and the detached disguises were secured to the outer hull of the Calico, fueled and ready for the approaching conflict. This was a scene that John and Sarah were admiring as they looked out a window from the observation deck of the superstructure. Okay, Dad, we need to get some fighters of our own. That just looks way too good. John was in full agreement. It was like the ship was designed to carry a squadron into battle. Show General Smith a few of these pictures and you might just get your wish. This reference brought with it some uncomfortable memories. I wonder if the general is as mad at the president as Rachel probably is, she wondered aloud. Oh, probably. But he's a lifelong military man, and his son is part of that tradition. He might be mad, but it wouldn't stop him from doing his job. And with that, John said his goodnights and slipped off to bed. Tomorrow was going to be a terribly busy day. The time of encounter approached, as did the large glowing ball of charged plasma. The occupants of the Calico's bridge found the view a bit unnerving, as if watching an explosion slowly grow until it completely enveloped the ship. Rajem was upon them, and the satellites that lagged would soon be upon them as well. John was not taking chances that something might happen to the Talon fighters if left outside on the hull. It was simply a matter of loading several of the birds inside the cargo bay, then repositioning them to the rally point and returning for the rest. The whole operation took an hour, and finally, the fighters were on their own, closing ranks with the fourth planet in the system. There was only two vessels left in orbit, and both commanders were likely questioning why the third ship had not returned with a Talon prize. Let them wonder, Nina Tam thought to himself. They are about to have more things to deal with than a missing ship. The Calico was on step at a point near to the planet, waiting for the show to start. It was totally dependent on when the fighters got into position and attacked the larger vessels. What would happen at that point was pure speculation. The only hard data they had about any of the Rumorian ship's defensive capabilities was the Raider, and that ship had left the system on a vector that suggested a destination on the far side of the star's planetary group. These two larger vessels might be hardcore warships, or they might simply be a transport or supply vessel. There was only one way to find out, and the coming moments were going to supply the answers. Each of the 18 remaining fighters had a collection of missiles located inside the body of the craft. They also contained a laser-like, pulse-driven cannon that could blind and or destroy electronics. Such a device seemed useless against something that appeared to be constructed out of nothing but thick metal armor. Time would tell. The pilots had all practiced the maneuver expected of them, with the Calico, multiple times, and everyone involved was comfortable with the plan. As the first four fighters approached the two targets, the intense bursts of laser light were the first things to announce their arrival. Okay, here we go, ran through everyone's mind. Two targets, two fighters for each, and with the system showing that the impact zones were acceptable, the missiles were launched. The explosion certainly did damage to both engine systems as the pilots flew past at a high rate of speed, heading to the rendezvous location with the Calico. The close-in weapon systems of the Rumorian ships automatically targeted the quickly dwindling ships and opened fire. The location of the weapon systems were automatically updated on all the fighters, and the missile targeting systems marked the locations. A moment later, a second set of fighters approached the two objectives and fired. But this time, the ships were more prepared. They had time to track the menace, knocking out one of the advancing missiles and damaging one of the fighters. Again, the threat plot was updated with additional information about the two Rumorian ships. Moving beyond the hazard region, both fighters soon met up with the Calico, which miraculously appeared several thousand yards in front of them. As they made their way into the storage area, the four fighters were quickly looked over and the damage assessed. I'm good, thought the pilot as the crew members tore off the jagged piece of metal from the outside of the small craft. By the time this was complete, the Calico had already moved the ship back to the rally point and the four craft were sent on their way again. As far as Rumorians were concerned, there was a never-ending string of these damn pests shooting at them, and it was starting to hurt. Little did they know, there were only so many missiles, and if the fighters ran out before the ships left, there was not a plan B. The Calico was not going to use her own weapons unless she was fired upon first. Nina Tam understood, and would have felt the same if the roles were reversed. He simply hoped that the collection brought to the fight would be enough. It took the better part of an hour, but finally the two hulking giants limped away to make repairs. The ships were damaged, but still able to outrun the Talon fighters. Each aware, they would be back soon enough, and once the Raider and the fourth ship returned, the fight would be brought to the Talon with their inferior units.
The call was sent out to both. Prepare for battle. With the two rumor Ryan ships gone, the modified skiff arrived at the planet and began to make the first set of landing steps. There were four people on board. Rami, driving the skiff, and three Talons in the back, ready to jump out and get the prisoners organized and moving. The skiff, with its new shell, also had a powerful set of engines that were going to allow the whole thing to land and take off with a load. They did not need to gain much altitude, but stepping from the surface would likely distort the plasmoid and wreck the ship. So while the skiff began the first of many landings, the Calico was in the process of ferrying the fighters back to the staging area. By now, well within the cloak of the plasma that Regem was providing. There was a good chance that if everything went well, they would still be in the plasma sheath, as the last of the prisoners were transported back to Talon. Closer examination of the fighters proved that two of them were no longer capable of performing their duty. The damage sustained was too great. It was decided that the intact units which accompanied the captured Rumorian ship would be swapped out for these damaged ones. There was no telling if the raiders would reappear, and if so, having the extra muscle available to fend off any attack was preferred. Once all the attack craft were relocated back to staging, the damaged vessels were loaded into the cargo hold, and the Calico went looking for the newly captured Rumorian transport. It was not a difficult task, since the course was known and the fact that the step relay mounted to the hull was providing a regular position update. After a successful swap, the Calico made its way back to the prison planet to await the skiff and its liberated passengers. They would not be able to fit everyone on the Calico. Judging by the images produced from the doctor's camera, there was nearly 1,000 people down there in four different camps. The skiff could hold about 100, but the plan simply had the Calico clearing one camp and then transferring the group back to the captured ship. If everything went smoothly, then once everyone was off the planet, the last load would be taken to Talon by the two step-drive ships and the process reversed. The Calico and skiff would offload the people from the captured vessel, ferrying them back to the processing habitat high above the surface of Talon. The humans' greatest fear was that the prisoners would be aggressive to the Rumorians on the captured vessel, causing an uncontrollable and deadly riot. All parties felt that the sooner the two groups could be separated, the better. Calico Archives. The process of exfiltrating the prisoners was rather straightforward. The first thing that happened was a series of storage containers were dropped from altitude. Upon nearing the destination, they each released groups of drones. These drones were programmed to fly to the shelters, locate the sentries, and land. Once positioned, the canisters each carried was triggered, and the space was filled with an expanding foam that would soon harden. This event went unnoticed by either the prisoners or the sentries. When they did awaken, the guards would find their surroundings significantly different than when they had entered. With the sentries out of action, the rescue began in earnest. The new, more powerful engine at Rami's disposal was at first unsettling. As she and the Talons got used to her operating the modified craft in an atmosphere for the first time. "I've got this," she told the nervous passengers several times, in the hopes that it would calm them down, and her. It did nothing of the sort, considering they had no idea what she was saying, and the pitch of her voice sounded desperate. The small ship was thrown around violently from the buffeting wind and the driving rain, causing each of the Talon passengers to reacquaint themselves with a deity from their past. Once on the ground, however, they all breathed a sigh of relief, and out the door the Talons went. With the first load ready, the doors were closed, and they departed the surface. Arriving beside the Calico, the skiff mated the rear of the tube with the berth for the skiff, and with a solid pressure seal, the door opened. The prisoners experienced freedom once again, and they were well received. By the third extraction flight, Rami had a feel for the controls, and her assistants were getting comfortable with her abilities. This marked the emptying of the first camp,
and the first of the passengers transferred to the captured Rumorian ship. The explanation provided little comfort to the ex-prisoners, who were expecting to leave the relative safety of the Calico and walk through the tunnel connected to the hauntingly familiar transport vessel they feared, as if given a prize only to have it snatched away, leaving them the butt of a sick joke. Regardless, they did what they were told, and with the supply area devoid of guests, the Calico headed back for a refill. Prior arrangements had been made with the humans so that when the ambassador of the colony world came aboard, he was taken to the guest room by Nina Tam and Miesha. There, he was shown how to use the facilities and the newly acquired clothing that was specifically made for him on Talon. The ambassador broke down and wept, thanking the two of them for the rescue and for saving his friend from what was turning into a long and painful death from the injuries sustained by the lance. The mention of his name started a few things in motion, and after a brief explanation, left him there, chatting with Zualik, who was still under the physician's care, but back to his old humorous self. As with all the Talons, the ambassador could not believe his friend was in the neighboring star system, speaking to him as if he were in the other room. The truth of the matter was that the entire planet of Talon was aware of the progress that was being made. Sarah's suggestion had been acted upon, and three relays had been put out to transmit the video back to Talon in real time. As for the people on the colony world, they were only made aware of the planned rescue. They would need to wait for any news of the attempt. The Calico made two more runs back to the captured vessel to offload passengers, at which point they were full up. The rest of the Talons would stay in the hold of the Calico, and the group from the last camp would stay with the modified skiff. John had volunteered to be the one to contact this last group of miners. "Hey, it's my turn to make first contact," he argued, and was handed several items. One was the keys to the shock collars, along with 35 chits. A chit for each of the known prisoners that the doctor's software had counted. When Zalutik had been electrocuted, his neck swelled to the point of strangulation. Realizing that this would happen, the sentries relented and had the collar removed. That collar had accompanied his rescue. Once dissected, the keys were made for the rescue party. And in the event the keys failed, a special tool was designed to cut through the collar. It was apparent from the photos that the final camp contained a species that was not from Talon. It was decided that this last rescue party would consist of only two humans. The fewer surprises, the better, and it was hoped the prisoners would cooperate fully. Any excuse to escape the abuse being suffered. But as always, John had a backup plan. "Landing will announce our arrival, and if they want to be jerks about it, fine, they can stay there and rot." Once again, it became apparent to John that he needed a nap. "Getting old really takes it out of you," he thought to himself as the craft prepared for the landing. He was right about them hearing the ship land. When the skiff touched down, a lone occupant exited the ship to greet the weary group that had come to investigate the noise. At first, they were confused, but when John handed one of them a key and showed them how to use it, a glimmer of hope showed in their faces. As more and more came out of the shelters and the collars began to fall off, John was coaxing them into the gleaming tube and at the same time handing each one a chit. "Could be worse," was the argument. Several of the collars required the scissors supplied by the Talon Tech Department, but this new alien species had no trouble operating it, and the final collars fell away. When all the chits were handed out, two still remained. "Where are the last two?" John found himself asking anyone who cared to answer. It took a bit for the understanding to surface, but the group realized what he was asking, and one of the prisoners took the final two chits from John's hands and dropped them on the ground. It then covered them with the surrounding mud. The meaning was clear. Some of the prisoners had already situated themselves in the tube, while several were returning to collect some of the simple belongings, objects of importance that had not been taken from them upon their capture. John's comset came to life, and he heard Rami telling him that one of the ships had just arrived in orbit, and he should get moving.
"Which ship?" he asked Rami.
"You really want me to ask Sarah that question?" Rami replied.
"Yes, and hurry."
A few moments later, Rami called back.
"It's the raider ship we encountered with the supply vessel.
Why is that important?"
"Rami, tell Shannon to squawk the auto drills for a status check and hurry."
Rami passed along the request, but had no idea what it meant. Sarah and Shannon understood immediately, and the command was broadcast by all three step relays continuously. The Room Orions detected the transmission and began to scan the area using high-gain directional antennas. Once pinpointed, the optical scanner attempted to physically locate the source, but nothing was visible.
"Could the transmitter be distant?" wondered the operator.
It seemed unlikely, as all three were relatively strong, and they appeared to occur at the same time.
"It's a repetitive signal," the call came from the officer of the watch.
"We should move to a different orbit to get a better angle."
The order was carried out, but by the time the new orbit was established, all three signals had stopped.
"Very odd indeed," the commander told himself. "So many strange occurrences. First the Talon beacon, which sent him back to the Council for instructions. Then this weak broadcast indicating that two ships were being attacked. Now we are back, and where are all the other ships? Perhaps out pursuing an enemy. The excitement I will feel if requested to perform that task," he told himself.
"What's your status, Rami?" Sarah called, startling her.
"We're just getting everyone settled, and then we'll make our way back over to staging."
"Okay, sounds good," Sarah responded. "We just need to pick up the relays, and we'll meet you there."
The staging area was so close that Rami's flight computer was suggesting a step 220. That was good, because she doubted she could stay on step 3 for more than a minute or two before exhausting the fuel cells.
"We will have to refuel for the trip back to Talon," she realized.
As the ship departed the surface, none of the passengers looked out the rain-streaked windows. They just wanted to leave.